Okay, friends, hi. Here we are again. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 146A. And we have been looking at the ways that the rays, which are the transcending force, are transmitted through the constellations, the transmitting force, to the transforming force, which is the sun, through the transfiguring force, which is the planets that rule these various constellations, and then finally to the receptive unit. We have looked also at the microcosmic correspondence of this type of transmission. This is an inner light chart, and it relates to people who are on the verge of beginning their discipleship. And we have also discussed the idea that such an inner light chart could be created for those who are at the different stages of evolution. Perhaps the true disciple, the accepted disciple, the probationary initiate. Those are overlapping, accepted disciple and probationary initiate, and also then the initiate. And much would depend upon the ray of the soul, which would condition the degree to which these darkened areas are lit up and the order in which they are lit up. So perhaps this is something we can do at some point. We looked at all seven of the charts, but DK's chart is, of course, the best. And here he has it, diagram 4. And there are six other charts somewhat like this, but not carrying the same kind of specificity. And we don't know whether the triangles would be rearranged here. They might be. The planets might be rearranged. I mean, the planets. They might be rearranged given the different rays that would be coming through. So we've examined that also. And we're at the point here where he says the whole story of extension from the one to the many and the many to the one is contained in these macrocosmic and microcosmic diagrams, and obviously then they could be applied to different contexts, to the microcosmic, to the locally cosmic, and to larger systems yet. So from the one to the many and the many to the one, it's a third ray progression. Let us now take, he says, each of the seven rays and see how they embody and transmit the three aspects of will via the three constellations and their rulers to our earth. We enter into a realm of causes and are dealing with transcendent purposes. Remember, he used the word transcendental, transcending, to relate to the ray, whatever may be its source, as it comes through the triangle of zodiacal constellations. We enter here into the realm of causes and are dealing with those transcendent purposes, incentives, urges, and objectives of the one in whom we live and move and have our being. Well, we live in quite a number of, there are quite a number of those in whom we live and move and have our being. Even the one about whom naught may be said is one in whom we live and move and have our being. But he's speaking here of Sanat Kumara, the representative by emanation of the planetary logos. This great life, the Ancient of Days, the Lord of the World, Sanat Kumara, the eternal youth, the planetary logos, because he is that in extension. His names, many names, are of relative unimportance. He is the only existence upon our planet capable of responding to and carrying out the objectives of the solar logos, because he is a direct disciple of the solar logos. And he is, in a way, an emanated chakra of the solar logos. How can one being use another being as a chakra? Well, maybe the This particular diagram will give us some idea. And there it is. It's as if each lesser being is somehow contained within and an emanation of a greater being. So any one of these, for instance, let's just say seven spirits before the throne of God. Well, let's imagine instead that we're talking about a cosmic logos, and that all of these are somehow solar logoi. Well, then the seven major planets would be emanations of any one of these solar logoi, and every one of these sacred planets would have its own centers and so on and so forth. I'm not saying that that's the way this chart should be read, but there's a suggestive analogy there, and one that we can consider. He, in his turn, is the only one in our solar system, that's the solar logos, capable of responding to the sevenfold emanating cause, expressing itself through the Great Bear, or Ursa Major. Well, these are the will aspect of the rays. I'm sorry. Come through the Great Bear. There are other emanating causes, and of course there is the being, this is the cosmic logos of a kind, the Great Bear. The Great Bear is a cosmic logos. And there are sevenfold, there's a sevenfold emanating cause, it's the Great Bear itself. And there is that triangle, is there not? Remember, okay, we'll find out where we are here. Remember, we'll do it this way. Remember the triangle between Great Bear, Sirius, Pleiades, and our solar logos. So the solar logos is responding to the entirety of the Great Bear as a great first ray being who represents aspects of the head chakra system of the one about whom naught may be said, and the planetary logoi are responding particularly to the different stars in the Great Bear. Of course, there will be a particular star to which our sun or solar logos most responds, and that will probably be the second ray star at this time, which is Mizar. There's another star with it, Alcor. Maybe one represents love, maybe one represents wisdom. But it is more a visual double than two stars together. They would have to be studied to see how much they are really in within each other's process. We will, however, deal with the psychological aspects of the emanations of the seven rays, which embody the will to good. So we have the will to good and cosmic psychology. We remember discussing the idea that the will is not the consciousness aspect, it's the force aspect, it's the power behind movement, it's the prime mover. And it is not concerned so much with sensitivity and interplay as with manifesting the objectives of the archetype of any particular system. So now we look here at the different aspects of the will. This is a very exalted section. Although he has promised, he has said, we will deal with the psychological aspects of the emanations of the seven rays, which embody the will to good. What is the will to good at this level? Will to good is the will towards the fulfillment of the whole in which this will to good is operating. So it's the archetype. The good is the fulfillment of the archetypal purpose of the being who embodies the whole, whatever whole that may be. So we have Aries, Leo, and Capricorn, and they are working through the medium of four planets, Mars, Mercury, Sun, and Saturn. We don't know why, for instance, Uranus and Venus are not included. We would have to ask that. Why are Venus, or let's say Uranus and Venus, not included? Okay. Why are the hierarchical rulers not included? The Aries certainly works through Uranus, and Leo works through a veiled Uranus, the sun-veiled Uranus, and Capricorn works through Venus, but he has his reasons. This is the wheel which lies behind all initiatory activity. It's also the will that conditions the life through various forms of manifested creation. The initiation of the previous stages of creation, so what is creation? It's the creation is the process of manifesting the purposeful, the AOP, Age of Pisces, no, archetypal purpose. Archetype of purpose. The initiation of the urge to evolve, proceed, progress. Now we remember that the will to evolve was correlated with the third ray. So it is the, it gets going, this urge to move forward, to proceed, to progress. We have here the sense of progress onwards, which is the first ray movement. The initiation of the differentiating process in order to produce what? In order to produce, maybe simply to produce. So let us see how this looks here and whether we have somehow missed in order to produce. So, you know, the differentiating process is that which Fohat at first undertakes. Fohat at first undertakes this differentiation. So, the will to initiate, the will which lies behind all initiatory activity, a power which makes the act of initiating possible. The power which makes the act of initiating possible. Always moving forward then into a new space or undertaking that which will provide and create the new. Okay. So all that has gone before, the previous stages of creation have been initiated. Moving onward, that is initiated, and Fohat differentiates Mula Prakriti into substance, the primary building blocks of any creative act. Okay. These are all expressions or effect of the activity of the ray energy, and can best be summed up in the thought of a dynamic entering into. I guess the explorer has to have this too. This is a good definition. How can we do this? No. DFN. Maybe that's it. There we go. Definition. Okay. It's a good definition of what it means to initiate, or to be initiated, or to be the power behind the process of initiation. So good definition of the kind of action which accompanies initiation. So a dynamic entering into, by an act of focused will, of a new state of consciousness. The effect of the activity of this ray energy, of the ray energy, and all that can be summed up in the thought of a dynamic entering into, by an act of the focused will, of a new state of consciousness. So movement forward, just in simple words, movement forward into a new state of consciousness. This leads inevitably to a new realization of being. A new realization of being, and this is so connected with Aries, because it is in Aries, one of the signs anyway, but pointed out to be in Aries, that the experience of the state of being is apprehended, understood. One knows what being is. In this statement, you have one of the basic definitions of initiation as far as the initiation of the human being is concerned. A new realization of being, the realization of a new dimension. There are some initiations of the threshold, perhaps, where being, per se, is not involved. Okay. There we go. That's good. So this is one of the basic definitions of initiation, the entry into something new, and in the case of Aries, what is that substratum out of which all things come, out of which all things emanate, which is, in fact, the one essence, which is the common denominator of all things. So in Aries, you have the one essence, which is the common denominator of all things. It's the first sign we're dealing with, this, the number one, and one, the number one can be divided into all numbers. Not so with the number two or any other number, only number one. These are dim reflections of the dynamic processes to which the one life subjects itself as it enters into the dualistic condition of spirit-matter. It's a dynamic. These will processes are dynamic. These will processes are dynamic. The will here referred to lies behind the dualism and is analogous to the reception and focusing of an initial idea as it enters into the mind of a creative, advanced human being. So basically we have that Aries is the birthplace of ideas. So this is the will behind dualism. Will behind dualism. And is analogous to the reception and focusing of initial idea as it enters into the mind of a creative, advanced human being, his thought processes, and his achievement. Some understanding of this will come to the disciple if the disciple considered what fixed aspiration, a vision of the goal, and a determination to follow the will to good has affected in his life. Beyond this realization, he cannot go, but it holds for him the cosmic seed of understanding. It will burst forth one day into cosmic understanding. So there is a focused aspiration, a vision of that which is to be achieved, a fixed desire or determination to follow the will to the good of the greater whole as much as it can be understood. What has this led to in his life? So again, this is the will which lies behind all initiatory activity. The will, the directing power, or the power of direction, which lies behind all initiatory activity. What is it that makes one go forward? What concentration of energy is built up? What reservoir of power is gathered to make one go forward? What reservoir is of power is so gathered that one can go forward? I sometimes wonder if on a racetrack where you see these athletes preparing to run a dash or run a longer, the moment of tension before moving is very strong. They are working with the will to win, but they are certainly working with the will to run. They are directing their whole body forward in as concentrated and rapid a fashion as possible. So it's like they are initiating activity in a particular direction. That moment before the running begins is like this kind of will which lies behind all initiatory initiatory activity. These have to be reviewed, studied carefully. You know, they, at the end of the book, things lie beyond us a bit, and so it is in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. The ends of these two books have to be put together for the large overview. It is necessary to remember that on the path of initiation, the whole training process is towards the evolution of the will. What should we say? Its power, direction, continuity, sustainment. It is necessary to remember that on the path of the initiation, we remember that this path is ruled by what rays? Ray 1 and its concrete expression, ray 7. The whole training process is towards the evolution of the will. And this is possible because behind the development of love lies the revelation of the will. Well, which direction are we going in? Once we have achieved love, is it that no man cometh to the Father except through me? So through a sufficient love, through knowing the Son, the Father is revealed. Through knowing love, the will is revealed. Because all this is possible, because behind the development of love lies the revelation of will. But love is generally revealed first. Maybe in the case of some of the first ray monads and so forth, there is the sense that will is known and understood first, and then love comes along, because love is the most difficult aspect for the self-assertive first-ray type to develop, DK tells us. It is rightly taught that man's immediate goal is the unfoldment into full expression of the love nature, and following this full expression, the will can be revealed. This begins to take place and reaches a relatively high development, stage of unfoldment, upon the path of discipleship. The detail of the process in a broad and general sense might be stated as follows. So we're talking about the unfoldment of the love nature, which will reveal the will. All right, so what happens? Upon the path of discipleship, love is unfolded and will begins to unfold. So there is, here's the details here. The path of evolution and probation, the what we call the 700 incarnations. Unfoldment of the intellect and sensory perception at first. Response to the center called humanity, and the mind takes control and personality functions. Notice how mind and personality are spoken in one breath. Without mind, there is no real personality. The path of discipleship, the unfoldment of the love nature. Certainly some of the love petals and the love which is within the sacrifice petals, the achievement of illumination and response to the center we call hierarchy. The immediate goal is the love nature, and then comes the revelation of the will, and let's see how he puts it. The path of initiation, unfoldment of the will, achievement of synthesis, which is more perhaps than knowing about it, response to the center called Shambhala, dynamic purpose is in control, we have the will to good, and the monad functions. This is a pretty, yes, pretty straightforward, he says, this covers familiar ground for all of you, but in the effort to achieve a vision of the whole, a constant repetition has its place. So that's what hopefully will be the result of studying this book in this way, and some of the other books, a greater vision of the whole. So first the love, and the disciple is responsible for that, and then he can begin to tread the path of initiation where will and love blend. We can say this, that at first on the path of initiation, will and love are blending. Okay. Then, repetition has its place. We are now concerned with the third stage of the evolutionary process carried forward on the path of initiation and entered into as far as humanity is concerned at the third initiation and consummated at the seventh initiation, an initiation far more easily reached by people upon the first ray than on any of the others. The Christ has been reaching this. The Buddha has been reaching this. The domain of the first initiation is the logoic plane. Correlated, of course, with the first ray. All right. This, as far as you can grasp at this time, concerns primarily the creative will. We have to put together some ideas. It's the will which conditions life. It's the will which initiates. It is the will which creates that through which life must express itself. So the creative will, these are the words. Okay. And I'll make that a bit bigger for emphasis. This initiates a manifestation and conditions that which is created. It brings about eventual fulfillment. It overcomes death and or differentiation. Well, initiating manifestation, you know, how to say, let form again be sought, and conditions that which is created. So the first and seventh rays are involved here, and so is Aries. And we will see, I think, the eventual fulfillment is related to Leo, and the overcoming of death and differentiation, for they are the same thing, really. Differentiation is death, especially when it is not realized that differentiation is illusory. And once that is realized, the individual is everywhere, and there are no separating barriers, and the world of the dead and the world of the living become identical. Now, we're talking about here the creative will and its relation also to the will to fulfillment and the will which overcomes death. On the path of initiation, this is cultivated, and we are learning now something about its cultivation. Let's see further here. The initiation, yes, we're talking here about the will which is behind all initiatory activity. And in a way, this is the will of the first ray, but also it is the will associated with Aries, and I think he's going to describe that very soon. The development has been from one abstraction to another. The creative will, initiating manifestation, bringing about fulfillment, and overcoming death and differentiation. All initiates must and eventually do express dynamic creative will and a focused purpose which expresses only in the will to good and also that sustained effort which brings fulfillment. So here we have a general with a general statement. All initiates must eventually do express dynamic creative will, which I think correlates with Aries, and a focused purpose, again with Aries, which expresses only in the will to good. Our expression, the will to express, is only the will to good. So let's put it like this. The will to express works out only in the expression of the will to good. I would remind you here that sustained effort is the seed of synthesis, the cause of achievement, and that which finally overcomes death. Well, this is one of those statements which shows up again and which is so often quoted in the students of the Tibetan. I would remind you here that sustained effort, continuity of effort, as Master Moria says, I give you the joy of endless labor, is the seed of synthesis. And I suppose then what it means is discontinuity prevents the realization close. RZN. Realization of synthesis. Discontinuity prevents the realization of synthesis. Death is really a deterioration in time and space and is due to the tendency of matter to isolate itself whilst in manifestation. From the standpoint of consciousness, a disease and death are the result of two active forces. One is the will, which says to its instrument, I draw the essence. It doesn't say that at all, does it? I draw the essence back, something like that. One is the will of the soul. Okay, let's see what we're in here. Yes, we don't want that. And the other is return to me. So I think we can find this, and it correlates very well. There are the results of disease and death are the result of two active forces. One is the will of the soul, which says to its instrument, I draw the essence back. That's correct. The other is magnetic power of the planetary life, which says to the life within the atomic structure, the hour of reabsorption has arrived. Return to me, thus under cyclic law, do all forms act. And this is the tendency of matter to isolate itself. That's what we're talking about here. Okay, this is esoteric healing, and what page is it on? Page 248. And we'll make this green and smaller. So we're trying to understand what disease and death are, and why this disintegration, why the negation of the power to hold. This is what is asked of the first ray lord. Why this negation of the power to hold? Why death, O mighty Son of God? Why this negation? So, due to the tendency of matter, spirit, to isolate itself whilst in manifestation from perception of consciousness. If we could always perceive all states of matter simultaneously, where would death be? This isolation of matter, this drawing back, the magnetic power of the planetary life, which has the atomic structure be reabsorbed, it pulls away from consciousness and frees consciousness, or it cuts its connection with consciousness, and the consciousness will no longer perceive it, nor will it obey the behests of consciousness. This sustained effort of the Logos is what keeps all forms in manifestation and preserves even the life aspect as the integrating factor in form and form building, and which is equally an act of the sustaining will, can abstract or withdraw the life consciousness intact at the close of the cycle of manifestation. And that's very important, that the life consciousness remain intact. So all initiates must then eventually do express dynamic creative will, a focused purpose which expresses only the will to good, and also that sustained effort which brings fulfillment. Three things. All initiates, three things they express. And sustained effort is the seed of synthesis. It overcomes death. Death is deterioration in time and space. It's due to the tendency of matter, spirit, to isolate itself. Well, maybe matter from spirit, and spirit from matter. Could that be the case? And what of consciousness? So, matter from spirit, consciousness, and spirit from matter, consciousness. This sustained effort of the Logos, I guess I should make these three together. So we have dynamic creative will, focused purpose, expressing as the will to good, and the sustained effort which brings fulfillment. Okay. So just this deterioration in time and space due to the tendency of matter spirit to isolate itself, and both and both especially from consciousness. The sustained effort of the Logos, the third factor, is what keeps all forms in manifestation and preserves even the life aspect as the integrating factor. So life aspect, we can call it also the vital aspect, as the integrating factor in form building, and which is equally an act of the sustaining will, and which is equally an act of the sustaining will, can abstract or withdraw the life consciousness intact at the close of the cycle of manifestation. Death and limitation are synonymous terms. So once there is omnipresence, omni-anything, death cannot exist because the limitations have been transcended. There is the gate of death, and it is a barrier against the consciousnesses of those who here remain in form, and a barrier which cannot be repassed against the consciousness of one who has passed through but one time. You may pass, but not repass, except under the most extraordinary circumstances. Death and limitation are synonymous terms. When the consciousness is focused in form and identified entirely with the principle of limitation, it regards freedom from form life as death. It is identified with the vehicle. It thinks that it will not exist if the vehicle does not exist. But as evolution proceeds, the consciousness shifts increasingly into awareness of that which is not form and into the realm of that which is transcendent, or into the world of the abstract, into that which is abstracted from form and focused in itself. So as evolution proceeds, this happens. And this, by the way, is the definition of meditation from the angle of goal and achievement. Death and meditation, then, are going to be equivalent. Death and right meditation. A man can truly meditate when he begins to use the mind. The reflection of the will aspect employs it in its three aspects: as initiating his entrance into the world of souls, as conditioning his personality life, and enforcing and eventually bringing about a full expression of soul purpose. So these are a man can truly meditate when he begins to use the mind. The reflection of the will aspect employs it in three aspects. So this is what happens in meditation. Right. An initiation into the world of souls as conditioning his personality life. That's the second. And as enforcing and eventually bringing about a full expression of soul purpose, I suppose, through the personality. This results in the complete overcoming of death. I am bringing this whole concept down into terms of the microcosm, even though it will be obvious that only the pledged disciple in preparation for initiation can begin to grasp some of the significant implications. To be initiated is to die to the limitations of one's former life. Okay. The overcoming of death. Now, even though we're talking about the creative aspect of the will, he seems also to be branching into the other aspects of the will. Initiating his entrance into the world of souls. So meditation and death have many things in common. They initiate entrance into the world of soul, and they bring about a recharging, reconditioning of the consciousness so that eventually, with full expression, the soul purpose may be manifested. That's the purpose of reincarnation. So let us say that meditation and death have points in common. And they certainly leave behind limitation. Death transcends limitation. The consciousness which emerges at death transcends limitation, even though those who are dying may not realize this, and meditation transcends limitation. Death and right meditation, let's just say, both transcend limitation. Okay. Perhaps I can best sum up the keynote of the first ray of Buddha power as it seeks expression as a dynamic purpose on earth and in relation to the human being by paraphrasing the quoting or paraphrasing the old commentary. The transcendent one, the life, the whole, the all equivalent terms. Being descends to manifest, we are told. God is. The transcendent one, the life, the whole, the all, entered into communion with itself, and by this act became a vital point of life and focused power. And I think what we can say is here, we can say that, or see, that the point appeared. Appeared in that which had no point. The transcendent one, the life, the whole, the all, and I suppose this is intra-universal creation. I don't know if we're speaking about the ultimate becoming of the universe, although the universe is a point, and every point is next to nothing, and therefore an ultimate negligibility. But that's the ongoing theme which I have been thinking about and always try to find places where this theme has some connection. It entered into communion with itself and became a vital point of life and focus power. The universal logos is a vital point of life and focused power. I am and I am not. Greater than this is that. Smaller than that is this. So small that I think I'm justified in calling it the ultimate negligibility. But that must show to this the nature of the whole, and showing prove itself unto itself, which is one of the outer proof of itself to itself. A reason for creation. Being descends to manifest. I am and I am not. Greater than this is that. This is any particularity. Any particularity. Smaller than that is this, infinitely small. But that must show to this the nature of the whole and prove itself unto itself. Now, the itself has to be the that which shows. And strangely enough, that itself is related to that, and itself is related to this. But that must show to this the nature of the whole, and showing prove itself unto itself. Well, anyway, what this can mean, proving itself, itself unto itself is to prove that itself, this, is in fact itself, which is that. So when we look out and we see the contents of consciousness, we have to somehow find a way to prove everything we have become, that everything we have become is the one thing which became it. And we must absorb every content of consciousness into wholeness, which we are. So showing prove itself unto itself. In other words, for so long, this is not seen as an emanation of that. And this state of incomplete realization must end. Okay. I, the beginning, am. I am the outward and the inward way. And back into the point of concentration, and from the point I turn again unto myself. And from the point I turn again unto myself, carrying within my heart of love that which I, the one, have served, and that for which I sacrifice myself. So this is all about the reabsorption of this into that. The outward way produces this. The inward way reconfirms that. This point of concentration, which was created when I began to, what does it say, contemplate myself? He entered into communion with itself, and by this act became a vital point, a focus power. Back into the point of concentration, or back into the vital point of focused power created through the communion of that with itself, back into the point of concentration, and from the point I turn again unto myself, carrying within my heart of love that which I, the one, have served. In other words, all the emanations of myself, and that for which I sacrifice myself, capital M. So the contents of consciousness which I have become, I carry back into my synthesized nature. And I suppose I should be using a word like capital M, my synthesized nature. In the process of sacrifice, that which is the sustaining whole, the inner core of all life and the principle of integration realizes within itself the following stages of consciousness. Sacrifice, well, basically, this is what happens. Sacrifice returns the many parts unto the whole in full consciousness. So sacrifice is not about being less, as Master Maurya says, is not about becoming less, but about re-becoming more, the very whole. That's what sacrifice is. If we could but realize it, it's a loosening of our consciousness from form. It's the loosening of engagement with limitations. Sacrifice is the loosening of engagement with limitation, and or with lesser self-perceptions, because that's essentially what all limitation is. It's a non-registration of the wholeness of self. It's an act of perception. It's a limitation is an act of partial perception. So, in the process of sacrifice, that which is the sustaining whole, which every one of us is the inner core of all life, the core of all life, the heart of all life, which we call the essence of life, which is sometimes called simply life. Oh, yes, sometimes called simply life. And the principle of integration realizes within itself the following stages in consciousness. Okay. It knows itself as the transcending will, the will which sees the entire process from the point of initiation, sees the entire purpose from beginning to end, but which limits itself to the gradual expression in time of that which will, on account of the limitations of those aspects of itself, whose consciousness is that of the whole, but which limits itself to the gradual expression of that which will, on account of the limitations of those aspects of itself, whose consciousness is that not that of the whole. It is the, it knows itself as the transcending will. In the process of sacrifice, that which is the sustaining whole, which is being in its undifferentiated wholeness, the inner core of life, and the principle of integration realizes within itself the following stages in consciousness. So these are realizations of stages of consciousness. So it knows itself, the great being, which we are, knows itself as the transcending will which sees the entire process from the point of initiation, but which limits itself to the gradual expression of that will, of that will, it's not which will, there we go, to the gradual expression of that will in time and through space, on account of the limitations of those aspects whose consciousness is not that of the whole. So this is a voluntary self-limitation for the sake of parts, fragments, unrealized fragments. Voluntary self-limitation for the sake of the, let's call it, fragmented lives. That which initiates, sees the end from the beginning and works towards the goal in progressive stages, not for itself, because it's already there, but for those aspects which are still limited, unaware, blind, unseeing, and unreasoning. So the fullness of being realizes the aspects of itself which are in a state of very partial realization of being. The fullness of being realizes the presence of those aspects of itself which do not dwell in the fullness of being. For those aspects which are still limited, unaware, blind, unseeing, unreasoning. This great life, you know, is what it is. Being knows itself as, it knows itself as the transmitting will. This is in the place of the constellations, working from the point of synthesis, stepping down the energies distributed in line with the creative evolutionary plan. Form under the third ray must limit the full possibilities expressed above. Form is always a limitation. This, the life of our planet, carried forward in three major stages, particularly from the consciousness angle. That is, via Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity. So there was a stepping down process. The life of our planet stepped down the nature of being of our planet, stepped down nature of being in three phases. And before us are the phases, Shambhala, hierarchy, humanity, a descent into the, from the head to the heart to the ajna or the throat. And from thence the transmitting life moves outward into all other kingdoms of nature. Each great center is therefore a transmitting agency. So being, this is all part of what we call being descends to manifest. So every center is transmitting the life of being. Every center is transmitting the life of being. However gradually that life is being transmitted and however much subject to time. The fourth grade of hierarchy, the human kingdom, is the agent through which eventually the energies of Shambhala and the hierarchy will be focused for the redeeming of the life of all the sub-human kingdoms. When we have solved our own personality problems as a family kingdom, then we can turn to the lesser groupings and ensure that they can receive the full measure of that which is transmitted from the one being. This can only take place when humanity can work with the focused will. You know, how will humanity... Nope. We have to say, how will humanity work with Vulcan and the Mineral Kingdom? So this can only take place when humanity can work with the focused will engendered by the life of Shambhala, inspired by love, fostered by hierarchy, and expressed through the intellect which humanity itself has developed. All of these used dynamically and consciously under the pressure of that which is greater than Shambhala itself, the planetary logos and the solar logos and Sirius particularly, but finally the Pleiades, which are, I think, in our local cosmos system, the ultimate source. So this, it knows itself as the transmitting will, this great being. Being knows itself as things, as it descends. So it knows itself as the transcending will, a will which does not have to be applied below, but is by choice, for the sake of those beings whose consciousness is not yet that of the whole. And then as the transmitting will, stepping down the energies distributed in line with the creative evolutionary plan. So this is not so much about purpose as it is about plan. The transmitting will is more about plan than purpose. This, the life of our planet, carried forward in three major stages, particularly, you know, the work with the creative evolutionary plan, and the emergence of these three kingdoms was part of the plan. From thence, the transmitting life moves outward from establishing Shambhala hierarchy in humanity, it moves outward and into the other kingdoms and groupings and centers. Into the other kingdoms, groupings, and centers. Each great center is therefore a transmitting agency. It's the receiving and transmitting. The fourth grade of hierarchy, the human kingdom, is the agent through which Shambhalan hierarchy will eventually bring about the redemption of the subhuman kingdoms. But humanity can only find its proper place on the planet when it uses the will. When it finds the humanity can only find its proper place on the planet when it finds the will and works with the will. So Vulcan is so important here, and the other planets which rule the different kingdoms. But Vulcan certainly with the mineral kingdom, and that's one of the first. It's one of the first with which we are going to work. We've reached the point, I seem to be running over a bit, but this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 146A, and we are on page 617 already. Oh, we're making progress. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 146B. Page 617. We are in a section which will require much rereading. So far, we've been descending via transcending, transmitting, transforming, transfiguring, and the receiver. But we've only gone through the elaboration of the transcending will, which sacrifices itself, and the transmitting will, which distributes. That's the word there. Energy through the various centers through which it is the purpose of the transcending will to express. And in our next section, we will get into the transforming will. He is descending in order so we can understand this whole process of relating the one to the many and the many to the one. So we'll be back shortly.